it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it's chicken. I like fried chicken.
I am absolutely fat.
You don't have to be fat. It's a state of mind.
Think like a fat.
That's what we do. Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And at 2 p.m. on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, it's Down the Line with Cody Decker, presented by Circus Sportsbook Las Vegas. That'll be after us. And right now, we welcome back to The Score, a man who has produced this show, co-hosted, sat in for Mark Rohde, and now comes on as one of the co-hosts of the 100th episode of the I'm Fat podcast. The Score's hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and largest seems to be a good word in discussing the I'm Fat podcast. And here's Rick Camp. Congratulations.
Thank you. I did not know when we started actually doing episodes and the podcast became more than just a bit on the Spiegel and Parkin show that we would ever get to 100 episodes, but I'm happy that we have, and I'm really happy that the podcast and the community around it has really become what it has.
Did you get emotional like Jake Berger when on the 100th episode?
You know, we each had a moment where we really got very reflective and stuff. Like for me, yeah, I did the whole, you know, in those months when I was laid off, the only way I knew what day it was the day we recorded the podcast, that type thing. But like, which is sadly more true than I'd like to admit in terms of knowing what day it was. but I mean, yeah, we've each put a good amount into this, sometimes quite literally. But, you know, that it's a lot of fun to do. It really is a lot of fun to do what we do. And the fact that there's so many people that legitimately reach out and say, hey, you know, just kind of owning the fact that of your fat tendencies, and it might not be all the time, but when you do, has kind of become taboo a little bit. So the fact that we're just kind of bringing it to the forefront and owning it is, you know, it's cool that we're able to help people with getting.
Well, I'm glad that you're owning it too. There's one thing that I got to say here, Rick, is that I've noticed that Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel, every time they have a chance, they make sure to say that they take credit for you guys. It's time that you guys are
That's
on your
adorable.
Own. It's right. It's like American Idol. You know, it's like, yeah, that was the forum, but I'm on my own now. I'm my own thing. I'm my own pop star. You guys are your own stars. It's time to cut the cord. So I'm just sending that message out there.
Yeah, I want to say we don't have the cord connected on our end at this point.
Oh.
Obviously, it's great that you know, it's great that that was our avenue to be able to get started. But
right.
The conversations were already happening on the other side of the glass during the Spiegel and Parkin show when we were paying attention to the show. When we may not have been paying attention to the show, who knows? But you know, Jay and I have been friends for much longer than we've been doing the podcast. But also, like, to credit those two guys, us having the freedom to crack the mic as often as we had and as much as they wanted to bring us into the conversation certainly accelerated the process. And I'm pretty sure it was Danny that first coined "I'm Fat" podcast. But just the fact that we've been, you know, able to take it from literally a bit to something where we have sponsors and, you know, we're able to work with Fredo's Culinary Kitchen on a burger that with the podcast name in it. And we have Charlie, the bacon guy, making special bacon for us. I mean,
it's amazing.
It's really a hard for it to get a lot better than this.
Well, awesome. Let's talk about the celebratory burger. And by the way, you are the perfect people, the perfect podcast to thank all the little people. You really can do that.
That's true.
All the fit people.
Yeah, we want to thank all the little people. So let's have you describe The you mentioned Fredo's. It's in Schaumburg, F-R-A-T-O-apostrophe-S. They have prepared actually two culinary delights at your creating, correct?
Yeah. When Jay and I initially went in to taste test the burger, there'd been an email chain with a couple of the chefs over there, because what's cool about Fredo's is that it's also that it's a bunch of culinary students that are mostly running the place. So they let their creativity run wild, and they encouraged us to do the same with this burger. So just to describe the burger, you start with the key to me is Texas toast. Mm-hmm. Two huge thick slices of Texas toast. Then you put on the whiskey barbecue pulled pork. Mm. And that barbecue sauce is so key to this entire burger. On top of that, you have mac and cheese with breadcrumbs, because you do need that little bit of texture. And then it's also cooked on the griddle, so that way you get a little bit of crust. So that it's not, and it also kind of helps keep things contained a little bit. So yeah, that's appreciated. Then you get two smashed bacon beef burger patties, which are just incredible. Those are topped with a buffalo mozzarella and provolone mix. More whiskey barbecue sauce just drizzling more over the top. And then the other piece of Texas toast. It is incredible. When Jay and I went to try it, we were like, okay, you know, a lot of these burgers and, you know, just food things that are more for shtick than anything, they're not that great. They don't taste great. They look funny. They look huge, but they're not that great. This legitimately tastes really, really good. And then when we were at Fredo's, Chef Joe comes up to us and he's like, oh yeah, we were going to make this a pizza too, because and we're like, okay, awesome. So essentially take everything that I just said, maybe outside of the Texas toast, and put it on a pizza. And what they do at Fredo's is they sell 1 pound slices. So you can get a pound
slices.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, why would you ever have a slice any smaller?
Yeah, silly me.
But I haven't had the slice of pizza yet. I will before the month is up, because this is the Fredo's Culinary Kitchen burger and pizza of the month. They have one per month. So for July, you can go to 628 South Roselle Road in Schaumburg. Go to Fredo's, get that burger, get a slice of pizza, whatever you want, and I'm thrilled. I'm honestly thrilled with it. It looks awesome. It tastes even better.
You asked for the I'm Fat Burger or the I'm Fat Pizza, right? That's the actual name of it.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Will you guys be doing your podcast from there, maybe? Is that like a good idea, maybe? By me?
It's part of when we were starting to think about things we could do, like in theory, in the next 100 episodes, or however you want to frame it. That's right. One of the things we brought up, because we had the idea right, you know, like before the pandemic hit, of, hey, we should start, you know, going to places and doing some live podcasts. Well, that kind of got shut down. So now that things seem to be opening back up,
right,
that's more of a possibility. So we haven't set anything up. There's nothing in stone as of yet, but that's definitely something we're going to look forward to. And to tease something else that we teased at the end of the 100th episode, something we've also been thinking about doing for a while that I think is probably more possible now because of how everybody got used to using Zoom and everything during the pandemic, is an interview or just like a conversation that we want to have with people in the industry, fellow fats, people in sports, all that kind of stuff, called Between Two Fats. So,
and which one of you is Fats Galifianakis?
I think it has to be Jay, right? He's got the better beard. Yeah. So, and he's the funnier one anyway. So like that just works out for him to do that. And it's also a messed up podcast when I'm closer to the one playing the straight man in this. So okay. It really gets off the rails quick. But we don't, once again, like with that, we don't have, it's more just an idea at this point. We don't have anything locked in, but we're excited to start, you know, giving more to our listeners, because, you know, after I got laid off, we were able to do an episode a week. Then, you know, we've been able to do some extra stuff here and there, but considering, you know, we have a Patreon and we want to be able to give people more content, that's something that we can do to make everything more valuable.
I love that idea. I love your remote idea, Mark, and I love the idea of just Fats waddling into Fredo's, and also people who are fit walking into Fredo's with all kinds of wonderful ideas, asking you guys questions as you sit at a microphone, and you're eating while doing it. That's a wonderful picture, and I know it's wonderful for you too, Rick, the eating part anyways.
Oh, absolutely. And what's fun is how many of our listeners and people that not just listen, but that interact with us are normies. They're like, hey, I'm a normie. Like, or they're people that admit that they work out, but they work out so they can eat everything they want and not look exactly like us, which, you know, hey, I can respect that. Like, so believe I have a mirror. I know it's not great. Other people don't want to do that.
So this weekend, there is I am loath to call it a sporting event, but it is on a sports channel. And there's a men's and women's event, an open event, and all that kind of stuff. The long-running hot dog eating contest, Nathan's hot dog eating contest on Coney Island. Mm-hmm. I don't believe I've ever heard the Fats pronounce a verdict on competitive eating, only because it feels like it taints the whole process, ruins things. But then again, maybe there's something I've missed. So can you share the Fats philosophy on competitive eating?
I just don't get the rush. That's the thing.
There you go. All right.
I want to, you know, like if that's your thing, like, do you, if you're able to be profitable off of it, cool. Eating a lot is fun. So I get that. I get that part of it. However, that much in that short amount of time, that's one thing, like, Jay and I always get asked of how many, you know, like, restaurant challenges have we done, and we really haven't done a whole lot. So, because I don't think either of us are that great when it comes to having to eat X amount in a short amount of time. That's not necessarily our thing. Like, I am much more of, you know, we're only a few months away from the Chicago Marathon, so, which is something I bet you did not think I'd be bringing up. However, when it comes to, like, the food version of that, I'm much more of, like, the long-distance food eater, where I can eat all throughout the day, and then you'll be like, I wonder where all these 20-some hot dogs went. Well, if you gave me enough time, they'd probably be gone, and I wouldn't be hating myself at the end of the day either, as opposed to these guys, where Joey Chestnut ate 75 hot dogs last year. And then maybe even more impressive, you had Miki Sudo in the women's division eating 48 and a half hot dogs. Mm. So that's really impressive and something I have really no desire to ever do in any short amount of time.
Rick, have you ever considered working out?
I have, actually.
Oh, okay.
I have considered it.
How'd that go for you?
Yeah, well, it was a fleeting thought. I'm sure you guys have discussed this on the podcast.
Sit down and have Doritos until it's
passed. I mean, there's a long distance from where I am now to what is also like the lower threshold of what's considered fat. So if I wanted to, like, I've got plenty of room for improvement there, if we want to call it improvement, but that's, you know, subject to interpretation.
That's right. One's own. So before we let you go, we're talking with Rick Camp. He and Jay Zawoski have celebrated their 100th episode of the I'm Fat podcast, born here on The Score and blossoming and bursting out all over in many ways with the I'm Fat burger and I'm Fat slice at 1 pound slice of pizza. That's unbelievable. At Fredo's in Schaumburg. There is something I saw online on the Twitter machine. There is a food delicacy that is quite seasonal, every 17 years, apparently. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the idea of people eating chocolate cicadas.
I'm not doing that.
Unnecessary.
if other people want to, do you. Like, I'm not really here to food shame very much, unless it's like a pineapple on pizza situation, which, like, as Jay and I have always stated, and this was a thing when we worked with Spiegel every day, because to Danny and Spiegel's credit, a lot of the times they would offer to buy pizza. But one thing that Spiegel always liked to do was on a community pizza, put pineapple on it. Which, awful. That part of it to me is a no-go. If right. it's a pizza just for you, or you and one other person, and you know you both like it, okay. But the thing is, that pineapple flavor can get all over a pizza, even if it's only on a portion of it. So if yep. it's a community pizza, pineapple's a no-go.
It's rude.
It really is.
Okay. I just want to run the chocolate cicadas idea by you, because they've long been various insects that have been covered in chocolate and considered delicacies or stupid acts. So I wanted to know how you guys came down on it.
When I was in college, one of my roommates was in a band, and they had a few gigs in Lake Geneva. So mm-hmm. I went up there with them because I had nothing to do that weekend, and it was an opportunity to drink at a discounted price. So why not, right? So I did that, and there was a biker gang up there, and they were just feasting on cicadas. And I was just like, what are we doing here? And these were not chocolate covered. They were not prepared, unless by prepared you meant grabbed. So I looked at those guys, and I was like, you know what? I'm good. No thanks. Don't need that in my life.
Bernstein is into that, isn't he? I think he's talked about that.
Yeah, he's into like the crickets and whatever. Like, how is it? The Seattle Mariners apparently have really popular way they prepare crickets at their stadium. So Dan's always putting out this pro eating bug doctrine that I just can't get behind. So he can have fun with that. He can eat all the he can eat the bugs. I'll stick to the burgers.
He could do his own podcast about eating bugs. That's fine. Yeah, stay away from I'm fat.
I'm the weird. He could do the I'm Weird podcast, and there you go. I believe that's open.
Very
Rick,
true.
Rick, congratulations to you and Jay, and thanks for coming on. It's always a lot of fun. It was terrific, and congratulations to you guys. And go, people, go to Fredo's. I've been hearing about this from Joey Ice, the frozen guy at my Trader Joe's, who himself was inspired, because you were talking about the culinary cooks. They just went nuts. They created all this stuff that you guys mm-hmm. tasted. And so he himself would take a fried pizza and used it and put in tzatziki sauce and gyro beef and onions and tomatoes, and made himself use the fried pizza crust as a gyro sandwich.
Oh, my God. That nice. Sounds so good.
Yeah. And he's the one who told me that Fredo's was like his hero's place, because every burger, yours included, every burger is 50% bacon and 50% ground beef.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's that. And then also they have gigantic mozzarella sticks. So even if you're out there and you don't think our burger sounds good, go there. I believe it's just on Sundays. They have a 13-inch mozzarella stick. And these are not small. These are not small in terms of circumference either. Like, these things are huge. Like, a normal order of mozzarella sticks is either, I want to say, like, five of them. And even for Jay or myself, five of those mozzarella sticks is a pretty significant meal. So I highly recommend trying everything at Fredo's. And that's not just because we're partnering with them. It's because before we had this partnership, I was going to Fredo's myself anyway.
Right. He's not just a hamburger there. He's a client. All right. Mm-hmm. Rick, it's great. Thank you very much for joining us. You made the world better, and I love the whole idea that fat is not it's not physical, it's a mindset. And I love Fat Weekends. This is one of them. Thanks.
I appreciate you guys having me as always, and being able to spread the fat doctrine.
There you go. That's right. Yeah.
Bye, Rick.
It's great. Rick was that's Rick Camp. There he goes. Jay Zawoski, the I'm Fat podcast, and that's quite a sandwich, huh? And now
I put it up on Twitter, and let's see, the one hilarious response I received was, "What is that?" So,
what is that?
Yeah. But it's on at Mark Rohde Sports if you want to check out the burger that Mr. Camp was just discussing.
All right, we'll take a break. At top of the hour, we will have Odyssey MLB insider Bob Nightingale talking about what could the Cubs get for all their failing stars in a trade, and what would the White Sox have to give up to get something? What do they need, and what would they have to give up? We'll talk to him about that. But first, we need to do what Mark heard. There was much to be heard on the score this week. And we need to do what Mark heard. Right, Mark?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's do it. We are Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I also know that we suck right now.
Rack and yak.
It's time for What Mark Heard on Saturday Suckage with Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum.
Boy, everyone is stupid except me.
And we suck so you don't have to. That's why we're here. And that's why we're doing our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard, so everybody could hear it. Mark?
Yeah?
Share with the class, Mark.
I thought you were going to say, Mark, what did you hear?
Mark, what did you hear? You're right.
Thank you.
I didn't do the proper lockout that we never talked about. Mark, what did you hear?
So Craig Calcaterra is a weekly, you've heard him?
Yes.
Yeah. He's a weekly visitor to the Bernstein and Rahimi show right here on The Score. Craig Calcaterra of the Cup of Coffee newsletter. And I don't think I have heard anybody put what he believes to be Chris Bryant's desires as definitively as he put it. So this is Craig Calcaterra with Bernstein and Rahimi just yesterday talking about what Chris Bryant might or might not want.
So you're on the record as saying that Chris Bryant, you don't think comes back as a Cub at all and that they should trade him?
Oh, yeah. I don't think he signs back with the Cubs. I don't think that even for an identical offer he would. I mean, maybe people in Chicago have better intelligence on this than I do. But, I think that whole deal with the grievance over the service time and the manipulation, that went really deep. And there were comments from Bryant and from others that allegedly knew his thinking that made that seem a lot more serious than your normal situation. I think Bryant wants to leave Chicago.
He has denied that. You know, his father has denied that when we've spoken with him. And I don't know if that's just posturing, if that's just trying to make sure that you don't burn a potential suitor in any way whatsoever. But I wonder if he feels also that there could be a change of scenery argument here, just hearing different voices, maybe getting himself in a little bit different environment so he doesn't have to keep trying to reinvent his swing every year.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, too. I mean, Chicago's not an easy place to play sometimes. I mean, I know that there's this long reputation of, people just want to go to Wrigley Field and hang out. But, that's old news. That's not the way it is anymore. There's pressure to be in Chicago. And I think, when you've only been here and you've had very high highs and you've had some pretty low lows like Brian has, that whole change of scenery argument, separate and apart from the business stuff, is pretty appealing. I mean, maybe he talks to Bryce Harper and realizes that, hey, going to Philly was actually a nice change for Harper, even though Harper's still the same player he used to be. That can help. As far as denying stuff on the business side, there's zero upside for a player in Bryant's position to say, yeah, I'd like to leave. I mean, there's just zero upside. You are with the team full-heartedly, at least publicly, until you're not anymore. That's just how athletes roll, and I think that's a smart way to play it, but I don't necessarily think that that's a window to his thinking.
Craig Calcaterra right there with Bernstein and Rahimi yesterday. I'll say two things about this. I love that from his outside of Chicago perspective, he realizes that the images of playing in Chicago, that it's not an easy place to play. It's embarrassing that maybe it was thought of as an easy place to play prior to this era of Cubs baseball. And then Steve, I mean, I guess I'm not surprised about him still being angry about the grievance, but that whole thing hasn't come up a lot lately, and I had not heard this perspective yet in terms of somebody being so exact in thinking that Chris Bryant has no desire to come back to Chicago.
Right. I hadn't heard it put in such a finite way, and going back to people close to Bryant at the time, the anger, it still oozes, it's seething, and it means something despite what he and his father have said, as Bernstein pointed out. All that being said, this whole idea of pressure is crap. If you're going to use Bryce Harper as an example, what has he ever won? What has he ever won anywhere? It's a load of crap. Chris Bryant has performed. He has performed under pressure. He has been injured a lot. If you want to get rid of Chris Bryant, Chris Bryant, go right ahead. I mean, you cannot rely on him for 150 games a year. When you do get him, you get a really good ball player, sometimes great. I could understand the Cubs not wanting to pay that price. And the reason they wanted that extra year is by the time he got to this age, what was going to be? It was going to be the Yu Darvish thing. How much are you going to pay for the back end of that contract? But yeah. If you want to get away from Chicago because there's pressure, then you're a failure wherever you're going to go.
Yeah, and we don't know.
You sign with the Yankees, the Dodgers? Guess what? Even in L.A., they've been known to boo people before they leave for the seventh inning. They expect you to win. You're expected to win. There are going to be questions if you suck. It's just the whole idea of leaving Chicago because it's tough to play or there's pressure. Well, if there's not pressure, then you're playing for a loser franchise. Welcome to Arizona or Baltimore if there's not pressure. Good for you.
How's he going to like it when they trade him to the Mets, when those talks reopen in the next week or two and he's playing in the Big Apple? So we haven't heard that from his mouth. That's Craig Calcaterra's speculation, but one would have to suspect that it's rather educated speculation on the part of Craigers. So it's interesting, and now more than ever, with the Cubs where they are, 42-40, 7.5 games back of the Milwaukee Brewers, who, if you didn't hear, the Crew won their 10th straight game last night. So they're not interested in losing, and the Cubs not particularly interested in winning ball games right now. Speaking of Stoney, he was on with Parkins and Spiegel yesterday, and it's time for our weekly sticky stuff update, and Stoney discussing how he believes it's working and what has been affected and what has not been affected. Here's Steve Stone.
Well, what I am seeing, and you guys can see it as well as I can, take a look around at the runs being scored. I mean, you're seeing some prolific offense, and it has something to do certainly with the fact that these guys are halfway through this season. It has something to do with the fact that it's very hot in a lot of different places, which means the ball's going to jump a little bit more. And I think it has a lot to do with the guys not using any advantage as far as making the ball spin a little bit more. You can take a look. You can quantify it. We quantify everything else. There's a Rapsodo machine, which shows you the revolutions per minute, and it's down across baseball. It's down on every pitch. It's down on the four-seam fastball. It's certainly down on the curveball and the slider. So we're seeing less spin. If you see less spin, you get maybe not less break. What you get is a little sharpness taken off that break. So that slider, instead of being unhittable, now if you make a mistake with the slider, now it's not breaking as quickly and as late, and guys are hitting it pretty well. So that's pretty much what you're seeing. But guys will make an adjustment. Pitchers will make an adjustment. And if it is more straight changes, or maybe, and God forbid to some of the guys who analyze this stuff, maybe you actually get to see a two-seam fastball every now and then instead of a four-seam rider that everybody seemed to go to. Perhaps we'll see that. And so you'll see some more ground balls. I mean, the two-seam fastball was pretty much invented for you to throw ground balls. And the four-seam fastball was invented, but it was popularized with guys going to the uppercut swings. You cannot really hit a high fastball with an uppercut swing. Just doesn't work that way. And so if guys continue to get launch angle, they continue to want to hit fly balls on every pitch, you're going to continue to see a whole lot of strikeouts. You're just not going to see the ball revolve quite as much.
The effect, and that's Steve Stone with Parkins and Spiegel yesterday, the effect, Rosie, has been more than I thought it would be, and I like that they have stopped everything in the middle of the season to implement this. So whatever I thought before, because I was kind of with people who are like, what are you doing this in the middle of the season for? I love it.
Yes. And now you get to see more Shohei Ohtani home runs. You would see more Kyle Schwarber home runs, except he hurt himself. So he's still got a little cub in him. He had 25 home runs when he got hurt. So he had 25 home runs, which is more than any Cub, any single Cub, by 7 over Javi Baez, and as many as Brizzo combined. And then he got hurt, so he still has a little Cub in him. That's the way that works. But Steve Stone should have said the four-seam fastball was invented to pants the Cubs.
Because pretty much.
Still getting them, and that's still and not adjusting. And that's, you can blame the organization for saying, look, they said it. Theo said it, launch angle is real. It's a thing, and we're teaching that. And then the Dodgers said, okay, we're good with that. You can't hit this pitch. You can't lay off it. So, and the Cubs have been striking out ridiculously, again, like it was the playoffs, and they're just getting suckered, pantsed time and time again. So I agree there's going to be more offense. I'll see what that offense becomes outside of Ohtani hitting two home runs or on a bad night, just one home run. But I'm hoping we see more line drives, more extra base hits, more guys on the bases. I was with you. I didn't think they should have done it in the middle of the year, but the rumbling started early, and there's been a steep decline in spin rate, and there's been an uptick in offense in everywhere except St. Louis and the Cubs. I don't know why they can't figure it out, but they can't.
Well, it looked bad like the first day it was implemented with the Max Scherzer stuff, and I forget the guy's name that pulled his pants down. Like it looked like, oh God, this is going to be a disaster. It's a bad look when the umpire, after a guy gives up three hits, is checking hats. I am there for it. Put the ball in play. So that's Stoney on Parkins and Spiegel. Let's jump to basketball. And it seems like forever ago that the Scottie Pippen stuff was hot, and him making claims of racism on former Bulls coach Phil Jackson, right, in regards to Phil Jackson deciding to give the ball to the white Tony Kukoc instead of the black Scottie Pippen in that one game. So this is interesting. Will Perdue was on the Score earlier this week. He also was on with Bernstein and Rahimi. And We of course, Will Perdue, just to give you the thumbnail, basically saying, no, I don't think Phil is racist, and I think that Scottie Pippen is doing this to get attention for his book. But he also said something interesting, that he said in terms he does not expect Phil Jackson to be silent about Pippen's claim of racism. Let's take a listen to Will Perdue.
He's put Phil Jackson in a position to where I personally feel like Phil needs to respond. Mm-hmm. But now he's not only pulled Phil Jackson into the equation, he's pulled the Chicago Bulls into the equation, he's pulled the league into the equation. And here's the other thing. I mean, I don't see this happening, but Scotty does need to be careful, because Phil could sue him for this if he so felt the need to do so, to protect him, protect his reputation and to protect his image. Like I said, I don't see this happening, and I feel like that, the Phil Jackson that I know would ask Scotty to take a breath. Let's talk this out. We don't need to do this publicly. I'll come to you. You come to me. Whatever it may be. I don't expect Phil to sit back silently, but I also don't expect him to make it a public sparring match either. But there. Once this comes out, there needs to be something to rectify it. There seems to be some kind of, as a friend of mine always told me, a win-win conclusion for Scotty and Phil and everybody involved. And it's something that, let's turn it into a learning experience. But as you said, Dan, at the end of the day, we need more proof. We need more evidence. We need more specific examples so that we have something that we can, back this up with. Because anybody can just say anything they want. And, the court of public opinion can take sides.
You're an ambassador for the Bulls. Is that right?
I was.
Do you still want to associate with them or not?
I got fired this year.
Whoa!
Love that quote. Mm-hmm. I love the way he says it with a smile. I got fired.
There you go. And so he's got everything going against him. He's got no credibility. But let me tell you what I heard. What Will Perdue said. I don't. Uh-huh. I realize Phil could sue him. That you could sue anybody. You can litigate any way you want. It doesn't mean you could win. And nor does either side really want to go through discovery if you want to head with this. But let me ask you this. For all that, all that has been generated from what Scotty said, where is anybody to support him? And the first name that came to mind was, where's Horace Grant? Mm. Where was his best running buddy? Why hasn't Horace has said something to back up Scotty? I haven't heard it. I haven't seen it. I assume I would have, because of the way this thing had grown and now seems to have sort of died. It's no longer bubbling. But where was somebody like Horace Grant to back up Scotty? Because Horace was Phil Jackson's target on a regular RS. And here's the thing. So was Tony Kukoc. Tony Kukoc was the new Horace Grant. When Phil was mad, when Phil, well, you could, when his voice was in full gravel, Tony, he took over Horace Grant's role as being the whipping boy. And that's again, I think it kicks Pippen's thoughts in the rocks. But where's Horace Grant to back him up? And Horace Grant was far more put upon on a regular basis by Phil Jackson, and Horace hasn't said anything.
Where has anybody been? You know, because usually, if somebody is prolific and present as Phil Jackson was, if he was racist, there'd be a bunch of guys coming out. There'd be unnamed guys. There'd be named guys. It would just be a parade to be like, yep, he is. I'm glad somebody finally said something.
People rushing to the microphone. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. That's the way those things work. And I haven't seen. And I know, like, Phil Jackson he said some dumb things, you know, like with the posse comments about LeBron James. He had said something about white basketball versus black basketball at one point in time. But those were, like, dumb, ignorant things. I don't know that those are classified as racist things. Those are things you can't say, but not racist. So, I don't know. Maybe Phil Jackson is a racist, but nobody is coming forth and saying it. That's for sure. So, right. Are you surprised that Phil hasn't said anything? Or do you think he's better off just... Because unless I've missed something... I've heard nothing from Phil.
I've heard nothing either. I don't really expect to hear anything. And there's no gain. He's not. If you're going to sue Scottie Pippen, then you have to prove, you know, what are you going to ask for? An apology? I mean, you can't prove losses. I don't know what he's lost. So the part of it is you ask for damages. And what are the damages? Your reputation? How are you judging that? Well, you can't judge it financially. You're not... Unless you've lost out on something we don't know about, so you don't have those damages. It just becomes an awful winding. You're walking through a thorny patch, a briar patch that you don't want to deal with. He's better off just being in Montana, picking up whatever Jeff Van Gundy wants to make fun of him for, and smoking his peace pipe and go from there.
Yeah, and this is one of those cases too where.
Vaping.
Yeah, vaping, right. Those of us who do the jobs that we do, it seems that everybody is Team Phil. Like, we're all doing Phil's work right now in terms of sort of laughing off Scottie Pippen. So that probably helps Phil Jackson's case, too. Like, okay, there's enough prominent people, not us, but other people who are poo-pooing what Pippen said. All right, I got one more cut for you, one more on this edition of What Mark Heard. And I know we're going to hear the entire Jake Berger interview a little bit later on, which was conducted this morning on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw. But I just thought the very end of the interview was perfect for Saturday Suckage. Take a listen.
Is it noticeable when you have conversations with guys that were with you in the minor leagues that, we're not only having a chance to play in the major leagues, but something really special may be happening here in this clubhouse, in this organization?
Yeah, no, it's really cool. Just having that experience with the guys that you come up with and the younger guys in the clubhouse and just, you know, being a part of a pennant race, it's always exciting. But hey, guys, I gotta cut it short.
Sure.
Super Joe's telling me to go outside, take some ground balls. So sorry about that.
All right. Well,
best of luck
for joining us.
Yeah, Jake. Yeah,
thanks
for joining us.
Well, that sucks, doesn't it, Steve?
You get the player of the moment, the best story going in Chicago baseball, and he's in the lineup today. And, yeah, that sucks. That's Saturday suckage. That's perfect. That's great. We'll replay that right to the wonderful, laughable end. Super Joe McEwing says, come on, got to play. Well, that's because he's the third base in the major leagues again today. So before we end this and we come back with the Wake and Bake Club has news, here's your White Sox lineup in Detroit again against Skubal. Tim Anderson, shortstop, leading off. Gavin Sheets at first base. Abreu will be DHing, batting third. Andrew home run Vaughn, playing left field, batting fourth. Leury Garcia, I guess he's healthy now. He's in right field. Jake Berger at third base. Billy Hamilton, hey, I remember him. In center field, Zach Collins catching, Danny Mendick second base, and Dallas Keuchel will go today on the mound. So
got a little parts. Cubs news for you, too. According to Sahad of Sharma, Nico Hoerner taking ground balls in the natty today. He is not in the lineup, but he has not been activated yet, but is expected to be activated tomorrow. So Nico, contact Hoerner. He's coming back.
There you go. That's good. All right. We'll take a break. We're coming back, too. And Seth Rogen weighs in about a sports event, a sports story, and you don't want to miss this. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Hey, guys, I gotta cut it short.
Sure.
Super Joe's telling me to go outside, take some ground balls.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage, but this is a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. Just a travesty and just an example of the more exposure of the stupid, corrupt IOC. American Sha'Carri Richardson will not be allowed to participate in the 100-meter dash in Tokyo because she smoked some weed. She was told her mom died. She needed to calm down. She smoked some weed in a state where it's legal. But in the IOC, you're not allowed to do that. You're allowed to drink. You know what? If she'd have downed a case of vodka, got roaring drunk, that'd be okay. But take a hit of pot to calm down? Nope, you can't. So she can't run because she tested positive for pot. And it is just an abomination because this is not a performance-enhancing drug. It's a performance-decreasing drug. The worst you could do is test positive for Cheetos. There's some kind of cockamamie logic that I've seen that, you know, a pot smoker could hurt somebody else. Well, so could a drunk. Nobody's banned vodka. So the IOC will clutch its corrupt pearls and claim it's also illegal in some of the member countries, which is, again, more crap, more the IOC being exposed, because this is the same morally bankrupt, corrupt IOC that holds games all over the world in countries that crap all over human rights. Looking at you, China. Looking at you, Russia. So there's no reason for this. It's really, she went on the Today Show, she said it. It's against the rules, I know, I did it, I needed it. My biological mother had died. And that's how I handled the news. And this kind of suspension, it was just awful. That it's just a shame that it comes down to something like this. When you have all these major league sports here moving towards understanding how therapeutic it is. Far better than opioids, although the NFL doesn't really understand it. The NFL is a dinosaur in that way. But it prompted this tweet from Seth Rogen. The notion that weed is a problematic drug is rooted in racism. It's insane that Team USA would disqualify one of this country's most talented athletes over thinking that is rooted in hatred. It's something they should be ashamed of. Also, if weed made you fast, I'd be FloJo.
Well, right. And their thinking is, yes, if one was to smoke a bowl before they ran their race, they could hurt themselves and others. 100% right. Like, if there was an athlete to do that, then they'd just be stupid. And there is no athlete that I know that would run a race while on weed. And I think that'd be another conversation. But to think that somebody would be stupid enough to either get loaded on vodka or smoke a bowl before a race, that's totally and completely insane. And you're right, what you said at the very beginning, too. Like, you could get drunk, which actually probably has worse ramifications than smoking weed. So, yes. Yeah, there's a lot. Like, she broke the rule. There's no doubt. Letter of the law, she screwed up. But there's a much bigger conversation to be had here.
Do you see a lot of drugs here?
Yes.
Out in the open, people smoking marijuana.
Yeah, I just did it right down the beach.
Who's that?
I don't know. Mike Rankin?
I don't know.
He just, it said drug drop, so he played it. George Takei on Twitter, after the news broke, he played Sulu on Star Trek, in case you don't know.
Sure.
He tweeted out, look, they once found trace amounts of THC in my blood, and they still let me pilot the Enterprise.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah, it is. It's an awful thing. And again, it's another example of corrupt and morally bankrupt IOC doing stuff like that. And American is, I know the U.S., I know Team USA, the U.S. Olympic Committee, would never pull out all of its people over this, never pull out its athletes. It's may not even work, but it's just such a prehistoric bit of thinking, and then trying to back it up, you're stumbling around, and whatever reasons you have clearly have been blown up already. They're laughable, and anything you say about that would be, you know, you make the comparison to alcohol that's not banned. They'll serve it to you in every venue of the Olympics, mm-hmm. right? Yep. They'll probably have a bunch of sponsors. There will be a sponsor for alcohol, and I'm sure they'd back up weed if they could figure out a way to get as lucrative a presenting sponsor who has some kind of kush, some kind of sativa or indica.
Let's call Rhino. We got to get Rhino. Verilife.
Well, you know okay. Saying? How about Monday? You want to have him come on Monday? We talked
maybe,
about that.
Maybe, yeah. I'll reach out.
Or Jim Belushi. How about that one?
No.
Okay. All right.
Don't.
I like Jim Belushi.
Well, I was just surprised to see he's a very dedicated, you know, farmer now.
Oh, I didn't know he was doing that. I like Jim Belushi. I think I'm the only one at the score. I know somewhere along the line it became uncool at the score to like Jim Belushi. I'm the one. I like Jim Belushi. I think
because you're a shift disturber. That's what you do.
I kind of am. You're right.
All right. Okay. We're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about what could the Cubs, what's the value of Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo or Javi Baez, and what kind of prices would the White Sox be looking at? Maybe at trading for Cubs. We've seen that before. But anybody that might help, and what exactly do they need? What forms of help do they need? We will talk with Odyssey Radio's MLB insider, Bob Nightingale, after this. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. Saturday Suckage and the Wake and Bake Club has had its meeting. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.